Oh, what's the matter?
Yesterday I stepped on a gnat.
Oh.
But I didn't mean to.
Of course you didn't. The frog and the ox, how about that? Once upon a time, the swampy meadow where the three little frogs played was always so peaceful and quiet. In summer, the hot sun baked the mud around the edges, but it brought out the good smell of the grasses. At night, the katydids sang in their shirt sleeves, and the young frogs joined them, and their cousins, the tree frogs, joined them. Summer symphonies under the stars. In winter, the small grass was gone. The tall reeds were stark and brittle, and there was ice and bullfrog footprints. Summer, winter, spring, and fall, this meadow had always been an ideal and safe place to play. Then one day, one spring day, trouble came. At first, the three little frogs didn't believe what they saw. They popped their eyes even farther out of their heads than usual and stared. They were frightened because they didn't really know what they were seeing, except that it was big and moving toward them. They did know that it was trouble. They pulled their eyes back in, turned in their tracks, and hopped for home as fast as ever they could. When they got there, their father was practicing catching flies in the master lily pad. They all spoke at once. It was awful. It was big. Help! Save us! And so forth. Quiet! Croaked their father. How can I concentrate? And he pulled his lids down over his eyes, pretending to be asleep, then jumped higher in the air, snapping at an imaginary dragonfly. There, I'm pretty big with dragonflies, he thought modestly. The little frogs were beside themselves. They squirmed and wheezed and tried to all talk at once. I can see, said their father, that you have something on your minds. Well, they all croaked at once, and it was impossible to tell what they were saying. One at a time, one at a time, said their father. Now, you, son, and he pointed with his front flipper. Clear your throat and speak plainly. Gah, began the little frog. What's the matter? Asked their father. Got a frog in your throat? And he laughed at his own joke. Don't laugh, father. There's some awful creature come to the meadow. It has horns on its head and a big tail. And hoofs, cried another. And it's huge, the biggest thing we ever saw. Their father laughed. Do you know what that was? He asked. A witch, cried one little frog. A monster, cried another. Big trouble, cried the third. Why, said their father condescendingly, that was an ox, a simple ox. Not so simple, cried one little frog. He looked mean, cried another. Trouble if ever I saw it, cried the third. Really now, said their father, was he any bigger than I am? I'm a pretty big frog, you know. Much bigger, they cried. Their father puffed out his chest. Bigger than I am now, he asked. Of course, they cried, much bigger. Well, their father was slightly annoyed. He blew himself up very big. Bigger than this, he asked, fixing them with his stare. Much, said one. Ever so much, cried another. He was real trouble, cried the third. Well, their father now was obviously annoyed. As a frog, he had always felt himself too big for most ponds. Watch this, he screamed, and he blew himself up even bigger. He was a very big-looking bullfrog. Bigger than this? The three frogs just nodded, and this enraged their father. He blew himself up even more. You couldn't see a wrinkle in his skin, and his eyes were nearly popped out of his head. This, he wheezed. If you blew yourself up until you burst, you wouldn't be as big, said one little frog. By half even, said another. The third one didn't say anything. He yawned and looked away. Well, sir, the father frog was so mad, he just couldn't stand it. Watch this,
he cried, and he blew, and he blew. He grew bigger, and he grew bigger. The little frogs watched in fascination. More, they cried, more. Bigger, they cried, and the third little frog had an anxious look on his face. Trouble? He mumbled. Well, sir, the father frog gave one last mighty blow, and like a balloon, he went a P-O-P. Pop! He'd blown himself up. Well, what did you learn from that, children?
Don't blow yourself up.
Self-conceit leads to self-destruction. Now, the next one is about a lion and a goat. And I'll bet you didn't step on a lion yesterday.
I did.
Bobby, please. Down at the spring one day, as a matter of fact, only about a week after the little worker ant fell in, there was another curious occurrence. It was still very hot. The dove who lived in the tree above the spring was away visiting some partridges in a nice cool thicket. The lion in the forest and the goat in the field both decided that they were very, very thirsty, and they set off for the spring. They chanced both to arrive at the same time, and as hot and tired as they were, or maybe because they were so hot and so tired, they fell to quarreling about who should drink first. Naturally, said the lion, being the king of beasts, naturally is right, said the goat. I am naturally more thirsty than you. You are not. I am too. Why, roared the lion, just tell me why. Because I am a plain and simple goat, and I naturally am thirstier than a great king. Exactly, roared the lion. I am king. I have a king-sized thirst. And he tried to push the goat aside. You, in all honesty, should let me drink first, argued the goat. A king is supposed to care for his subjects, to rule wisely and to rule well. I decree, roared the lion, that the wisest thing I could do now is to have a quick drink, or I shall rule no more. And this time he gave the goat a good shove. Well, the goat butted right back. There should be a law, bleated the goat. There is, roared the lion, the law of the jungle and out of my way. Well, the goat lowered his head to charging position. I'm dying of thirst anyway, he reasoned. The lion roared. The goat shook his horns. All this time, circling overhead, was a bunch of buzzards. While the two thirsty animals quarreled below, the bunch grew bigger. The circle grew smaller. The vultures flew lower and lower, their claws sharpened and ready, their appetites whetted. These birds of prey, each praying for a quick fight below. I do hope the lion wins, said one of the big birds, because I love good goat. I'm rather partial to loin of lion, said another. Well, I'm good and hungry, said a third. I don't care which one wins, but I wish they'd hurry. I'm almost as hungry as they are thirsty. Well, it won't be long now, said a wise old bird, and the vultures circled even lower. The lion bared his sharp claws at the goat. The goat shook his sharp horns at the lion. The lion bared his teeth. The goat lowered his horns. Me first, cried the lion. Me first, cried the goat. Somebody go first, for heaven's sakes, cried one exasperated buzzard. The lion roared. The goat bleated. The vultures waited. Suddenly, at the very same time, the lion and the goat looked up. And when they saw it was lying in wait for them, they froze. Who could argue in the face of that? Oh, sire, bleated the goat, after you, oh, subject, roared the lion. Foiled again, cried the angry birds. Moral, it is better to drink second at the spring than to furnish food for the vultures. Now, this is the fox and the grapes. Remember the fox with the unusual appetite, the one who liked cheese? Oh, I didn't tell you, did I, that he also liked grapes? Oh, he loved grapes, maybe more than cheese, especially after cheese. After he had eaten cheese, that is, grapes tasted especially good. One day, toward the end of summer, the fox was lingering over a late lunch of cheese. He held the last little piece of cheese on his tongue until it melted, and then he let it slip reluctantly but tastefully down his throat. Now, he thought, to top off this titillating taste, grapes are called for. Then he began to think where he had seen the most desirable clusters of this luscious fruit. Shall they be the iridescent white grapes or the dark and lovely purple ones? He was beginning to drool just thinking about them. He wiped his mouth with his paw and set out. He knew, gourmet fox that he was, that with fowl one had the light and with meat the dark. With cheese, he chose to believe the choice was optional, so he would select carefully, deciding between the white and the purple, the largest, ripest, sweetest, juiciest. Ooh, his mouth was watering so that he was drooling all over his fur coat. He began to run. He came to the first grapevine. He stopped. He looked. He shrugged. He went on. Another white and sweet. Then one dark and sweet-looking. He went from one vineyard to another. He examined. He considered. He scrutinized each vine, each bunch, each grape. None quite came up to his expectations. He was beside himself with wanting, but they must be the absolute tops, the ultimate. Finally, when he thought he would have to give up, he saw just the bunch he'd been looking for, the bunch of his dreams, larger than any bunch he had seen so far. Each individual grape a masterpiece for size, bursting with juicy sweetness and the color not as light as the light ones and yet not quite as dark as the other dark ones. It was the perfect bunch. It also was a little higher up on the vine. He swallowed and reached a trembling, clutching paw upward. Too high. He stretched. He stretched some more. He stood on his hind legs and stretched all he could stretch. The bunch of grapes was still too high to reach. It hung there against the blue sky, looking so beautiful and so out of this world. The fox jumped. He crouched and jumped. He got a running start and jumped. His dessert eluded him only by inches. He drooled. He rested and he jumped again. He flexed his muscles, made a wish, called upon all his hidden strengths. He leaped the mightiest leap of his entire life and missed. He hit the ground, though, coming down very hard. He lay there bruised in body and spirit. Through tear-dimmed eyes, he looked up at that bunch of grapes, so desirable, so unattainable. Oh, well, he muttered, they're undoubtedly sour. Moral? Any fool can despise what he cannot get.